Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by 127games.com, home of the cheapest Access and Allies miniatures. Find them at 127games.com.
Welcome to Wargaming Recon. I am your host, Jonathan J. Reinhardt. Wargaming Recon is the only member of the Troll in the Corner podcast network, but hang on a sec, because I have an announcement to make. This week, there will not be a new episode of Wargaming Recon. Instead, I'm going to pull one from the vault, a classic episode for your listening pleasure. As you can probably tell by my voice, I am not feeling well. I've been under the weather, and rather than make you listen to this for an entire episode, I am pulling a classic episode for your listening pleasure, maybe one that you might have missed. Don't worry, though, because I'm sure you will enjoy this episode, and next time I will be back with a new episode of Wargaming Recon, one where I'm fully rested, recovered, and everything. So thank you again, and as always, please send any comments or constructive criticism or your feedback to us at CWFGamecast@wargamingforums.com, and all the info will, of course, be in the episode you're about to listen to, and also at the end of it. Thanks a lot, guys and girls. Until next time, keep on gaming.
Hello, and welcome to the CWF Gamecast. As always, I'm your host, Jonathan J. Reinhardt, and this is episode 62. On today's show, we have dispatches from HQ, we have a little announcement about my friend Drew's podcast, and then we have kind of a discussion slash bat rep of the Battle of Abingdon using the Willard Games Black Powder rules. So starting things off, I want to talk about dispatches from HQ. Listeners will have noticed that there have not been as many shows lately that have been coming out. And the reason for that is my wife and I are moving soon. I've talked about this in previous shows and mentioned that the move would cause a disruption in the recording and the release of shows. The move's coming pretty close, so this is actually going to be the last show that will be recorded before the move. That means a few things. First of all, this show is going to be much shorter because I want to make sure that this gets out right away so that you have a chance to listen to it before the move happens. But also, I want to mention some changes that are going to be happening here at the CWF Gamecast. I've realized of late that I've not been completely able to get out a weekly hour-long show. Those of you who are fans on Facebook of the show will have seen that I have posted messages apologizing for delays. You know, one thing or the other has come up. But most of it is a result of my spending more time actually gaming, doing things that then appear on the show, instead of spending more time creating the show. I feel it's really important to maintain this hour-long format. It allows some sort of depth to be achieved when discussing different topics. It's also very helpful for when guests come on, that we try to have that hour-long show. It gives plenty of time for the guest and myself to go back and forth and talk about whatever it is we will be talking about. And then also, when we have special guests on, we tend to make the show a little bit longer. We go into an hour and a half, maybe 2 hours, and jumping from a much shorter format to a longer hour and a half, a 2 hour for a special guest or an hour, kind of makes it, I don't know, it's a lot of back and forth, a lot of yo-yoing. So what I've decided to do is I'm not going to alter the duration of the show. Each episode will still be about an hour long, but instead I'm not going to be podcasting weekly. This will become a bi-weekly show. It'll still be 1 hour in length, so every other week there'll be a new show coming out. Another thing that kind of helps with that is my friend Drew, he has a show, No Badger, No Gnome. It's his new incarnation of his podcast. It's going to be coming out very soon. His show's actually going to be released on this RSS feed, so if you automatically get this show, the CWF Gamecast, you'll also be able to automatically get No Badger, No Gnome. I am a co-host of that show with him. He has another gentleman who's also on, going to be on the show. His name is Slandy. Between my work doing stuff for this show, whether it's actually, you know, creating CWF Gamecast and editing and recording and, you know, all the communications and talking with all of you, which I love, whether it's the gaming or whatever else, or my work with No Badger, No Gnome, it's kind of all pieces together so that this bi-weekly format for my show will work really well. And then that'll allow plenty of time to do all the other stuff that shows up on the show, shows up on No Badger, No Gnome, and just all sorts of other stuff. Plus, it'll allow me a little bit more time to do things on the blog. So I do want to apologize to all of you for switching from the one-hour weekly format to a one-hour bi-weekly format. But the content's going to be the same. We're going to be doing everything else the same. It's just it's not going to be as frequent. Do want to apologize for that. But I assure you that we will be continuing with our content and everything, and that you will really enjoy it. So that'll be continuing on. And then the next thing on the agenda is the Battle of Abington. Battle of Abington was actually, it's not a real battle, as you may have guessed. It's a little scenario that my friend Adrian had created. A bunch of us are doing Black Powder, and we're playing it down at Battleground Games and Hobbies, predominantly at the Plainville location, but also in Abington. I'm creating an American militia force with some Continental Infantry and Continental Artillery and, you know, Dragoons, some sort of cavalry and stuff. Adrian is doing a Hessian force. And then we also have our friend Court. He's doing British. So we've been, you know, building and painting and that kind of stuff for a little while now. And I thought it would be a good idea to, you know, just play with what we have. That way we could get more familiar with the rules and maybe it'll help invigorate us to continue on and keep us, you know, excited about Black Powder and painting and everything. So we set up a time and a date and we went ahead and we did it on a Saturday recently. And Adrian was nice enough to create the scenario. It's called the Battle of Abington. And he created, like, this little... It's really cool. So what it is, his Hessian musketeers, it was a small musketeer unit, and two units of British line infantry, the 9th of Foot and the 62nd of Foot, were on the table. They were, you know, my opponents, and I had my American colonists. I had one regiment of militia, and one artillery brigade of one gun. So Adrian went ahead and he, you know, took basically the stat lines and stuff from the book, from the Battle of Freeman's Farm, and used those as a guideline. But he tweaked it a little bit because, as you can see, my forces outnumbered 3-1 if you're looking at infantry regiments. And that, I mean, that's just not going to make it a fun game. So he added a couple special abilities in. And these are all special abilities inside the game, in the rulebook. His musketeers, small unit, so they have to adhere to all the restrictions and the benefits of being a small unit. And the British line infantry have the crack special ability. And what that means is if they do not have any wounds on their unit and they need to make a morale test, they can re-roll a failed morale test. Then for my militia, he gave them both first fire and sharpshooter. And I know what you're thinking, militia, first fire, and sharpshooter? I don't know about that. But the reason why he did that was he wanted to try to offset the, you know, unevenness in the game. It's the first game that we all kind of were going to play together, so he wanted to give me a chance, basically. So first fire gave me an extra die for the first time the unit shot, and sharpshooter allowed me to re-roll one missed dice when shooting. And the little write-up for it is, Hessian flank guard encounters and engages rebel forces holding the town of Abington, Massachusetts. General Sir William Howe detaches two British line regiments from his advancing column to assist the Hessians in driving the rebels out of the town. So the table was set up. It was a standard 4x6 table, which I know you're thinking, that's a little small for Black Powder, but it actually worked for us. And on the table, there was a small little town which represented Abington. We had some great buildings. I used a J.R. Miniatures 25mm, Rev War kind of house. And then Adrian had some buildings there as well. And we had some fencing. We had a cornfield, which we represented with some felt that I had purchased. Court had some wonderful fencing that he made, so that got put on the table. And we had a copse, two copses of trees, they were, you know, little small woods. So I deployed my men first in the area of the town, right behind some fencing, some snake-type fencing. And I had my artillery, you know, all the way in the corner, over on the right, and then my militia to the left. And then the Hessians deployed on the table as well. And they were back behind the copse of trees. The British infantry were off the table, but they got to come in on turn two. And the reason for this was, you know, the Hessians were kind of like the advance guard. They were trying to, you know, just come out and see what's going on. But also, give me a turn to try to see what I could do before, you know, I got overwhelmed by the British. So what ended up happening, and I did a write-up on the blog about this. And if you go to wargamingforums.com, you're going to see it on the front page, the Battle of Abingdon. And I kind of did a took my hat off to Henry Hyatt, I guess. I did a little write-up, you know, like in-person kind of like fluff about the battle. And then I did a description of it as if, you know, told by the individuals in the battle. And there's lots of pictures which Adrian had taken. But basically, I kind of started off, you know, behind the fences, and Adrian's forces came up forward. You know, they shot, they missed, there was some return fire, some maneuvering going on. My return fire was not so good. Turn two, the British ended up coming on, and Court had never seen the rulebook before, had never, you know, done anything with it, whereas Adrian had played at Historicon, he played at Huzzah, I played at Huzzah. So Adrian was kind of the most familiar with it and kind of was staring us with the rules. And I was a little more familiar. But Court was kind of surprised by how quickly units could move across the table. When he had rolled his dice to see, you know, how many movements you would get, one of his units got three movements. Well, three movements at your max movement rate of 12 inches, I believe, means he moved 36 inches from the small table edge all the way across, around some trees, and almost, I think he was within 12 inches of my infantry. And he was really surprised by that. His other unit went around the other way of the trees. I think they ended up getting two movements. One thing he really learned by playing this is that when you play Black Powder, you have to be careful how you describe orders that you are giving to your units. If you are saying, I want you to advance as far as possible, and you roll those dice and you end up getting three movements for the orders, your unit will go as far as possible, and that might not be what you really mean. You might mean that I want them to go, you know, up near this fencing, which is like, you know, 12 inches away, and then I want them to, like, you know, turn right and then go around the other side of this building and then stop. But if you say, I just want them to go on as far up as they can, and in your head you're thinking, well, they'll probably only be able to make it up to that building. And then that's as far as they'll go because they can't move much further. But then if you get like two or three orders to give to them, so you're moving whether it's 24 or 36 inches, you might end up going further than you expect. And I believe that's what happened with Court. He was a lot closer to my guys. So he, you know, shot, didn't do much of anything. And then he charged. He charged me in the flank, which is actually a really good thing. But he was expecting to have another turn. So he was had his unit out there. What do we do? The shooting. And there wasn't a whole lot of coordination going on because it was unexpected. But I guess that kind of a little realism from the battle. Like things are going on and you don't know what's going on the other side of the battlefield. So he was out and he charged me in the side, in the flank. And I was like, uh-oh. Somehow or other, I managed to win that combat. Luckily, he ended up being, by that point, it was turn three or four. I think he ended up being supported by his other unit, which was within 6 inches. A couple things actually with this combat I want to talk about. Units within 6 inches, with some exceptions, can support units in close combat. We had decided that my artillery, which was within 6 inches of my militia, could not support because artillery cannot be supported. It turned out after the fact, looking in the rule book, that artillery, as long as they are not limbered, can support other units in close combat. There's some downsides to doing that if you want, because if you're forced to take a morale test, the artillery could just, you know, hightail it off the table. But they actually could do that, and I probably would have used them to support, even though after the fact it turned out I didn't need to. The other thing, Court's forces were supported by another unit, which was within 6 inches. He still lost the combat, and then on my turn, I did something which we had found out I was not allowed to do. And we only found that out after the fact. I wasn't sure if I could redress my line to basically deny him the flank so that I was in combat, but I wanted to kind of just turn left, so to speak, and then maximize my frontage. And we talked about it, and none of us were really sure if I could or not, but after consulting with each other, and Adrian, you know, flipped through the book, and I flipped through the book, and I mean, we looked pretty quickly, but we said, well, we can't find anything, so, you know, we'll allow it. Went ahead and did it, and I mean, after the fact, we found out, oh, I guess several days later, that was not allowed. So that was a huge no-no, because in turn the next turn of close combat, Court being in my flank would have caused a negative modifier for me. I believe it's a negative one modifier. So that's possible that that could have had a huge different outcome for the game. In the second turn of close combat, I ended up routing his unit. I think he inflicted one casualty, and I inflicted three. And by this point, he had extra casualties, so that caused negative modifier to his morale check, and then they ended up hightailing it. And then his other unit ended up hightailing it. So that left Adrian's Hessians as the only other unit on the field, and I just brought my militia back and hid behind the fence. Adrian was disordered, so he couldn't give them any orders, so they couldn't move. They just had to stand and shoot, and he wasn't hitting anything, and I was standing and shooting, but I had my artillery and my militia, so I was able to shoot him at a distance. And, I mean, at that distance, artillery's not great. I mean, you want them to be closer. And the militia, I mean, they only get so many dice to shoot with. Again, not great, but did enough to cause him to flee. It's very possible that the end result of the game, which was that I had won, I had only suffered one or two casualties total on my militia, and no casualties on my artillery. I had won, and I had completely routed the enemy forces. The British and the Hessians just fled the field. But if I didn't redress my line, if I didn't realign my militia in close combat with that first unit of British infantry, it is possible, although I think the outcome still would have been the same, but it is possible that rolling with that negative modifier, that I would not have done enough wounds to Court's unit, and that he therefore may have stayed in. And if he had stayed in, it's possible in close combat that eventually I would have lost, because, I mean, militia versus British infantry, I don't know. As I said, the game ended up that I had won, and it's a huge surprise to all of us. One of the things I liked the most about Black Powder was we were able to play this very quickly. We were very surprised by the result, but we weren't angry about it. It's a group of guys just wanted to have some fun, play some games. So we played the Battle of Abington. We did it. We set it up. It looked beautiful. And we just had a lot of fun. By halfway through the game, I guess, we were kind of just picking it up and doing it ourselves. We didn't have to refer to the rulebook as much. Although, I mean, obviously we should have regarding that close combat and about supporting whether or not artillery can support. But overall, we did pretty well for the first game of Black Powder using our own stuff on a table. A big thing about this that I really need to mention is that on this size table, we have decided that we are going to half the distances for both moving and shooting. On a 4x6 table, perfectly fine to play on. We didn't have a whole lot of units. I had, you know, one regiment of infantry in my artillery battery, and then Agent had his one small unit of musketeers, and Court had two infantry regiments. So not tons of units on the table, which was kind of nice, but I mean, it still, you can fit a Warhammer-sized army on one of these tables. But we decided that the movement is so fast, and the distances are long enough to allow you to have a large army on a much larger table, a 20 or 40 foot table or whatever, and still play a game in a reasonable amount of time, that on a 4x6 table, we were just going too fast. By having the moving distances, instead of going 12 inches per order to move, you're going 6. So even if you get 3 moves on your order phase for that unit, you're not moving 36 inches. You're moving 18 instead, and 18 is much more reasonable. And the same with shooting. So instead of being able to shoot like 24 inches away, we're having that. You're going to shoot 12 inches away, and so forth. That's going to be a huge benefit to us, and we're looking forward to doing another game the next time I'll be using these. So I'm just really appreciative to Adrian for drawing up the scenario, Court for having beautiful models and providing some terrain for us. It was a really good time. I'm really looking forward to playing this again. I have to say that I think it's a great rule set and that it allows you to quickly play a game. You don't have to get bogged down in the minutia of checking tons of charts or anything. When you're done, you can just kind of hang out and chat with your friends, and you're not spending 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 hours playing a game. You can get it done in an evening, a whole game, and you're going to have a lot of fun. You can have some beautifully painted stuff on the table. And then it also really encourages you to be a good sport, that it doesn't have all the answers of the rulebook for every situation. But if you're playing with friendly people who want to have fun, who want to have a good game, and who aren't going to, you know, try to exploit every, you know, comma and misplaced whatever or possible but unintended interpretation of a rule, you're able to come to a consensus and make like some sort of house rule, I guess, and say, well, in this situation, we're going to treat it as such. And that's what we had done. We had done it contrary to what the rules had said, but the rules would be okay with that. So if we want to make it that, although the rules say that artillery can support in close combat, if we want to say they cannot, we can make that a house rule, and that would be perfectly okay. A couple things just before I go, because this is almost a half hour long, and I did promise a shorter episode. I want to remind all of you, we're still doing our Name the Podcast contest. We've gotten a lot of submissions. We're looking for more. I'm hoping to be able to make a decision after the move. We're still doing our t-shirt giveaway. So we have HuzzahCon 2011 t-shirts to give away. I want to give a big thank you to Dean Emerson and the MHWA for the t-shirts. A big thank you for Henry Hyde for providing a whole year subscription to Battle Games Magazine to whoever wins the Name the Podcast contest. I want to remind you to go to No Badger, No Gnome, which you can find at The Gate Stormers. That's all one word, TheGateStormers.com. Drew has a new Healthy Gamer blog article up there on how you can be a gamer and do things a little more healthful. I also want to suggest that you head on over to our blog at the CWF Gamecast. Go to WarGamingForums.com. I have some pictures up from the Battle of Abingdon that you can find. Pictures on my 22nd Massachusetts Brigade. No, that's not a real brigade. I've been making up some fluff for my militia army for AWI. It was suggested that since I'm not painting things historically accurate completely, or at all, I guess that's the case maybe, it was suggested that I might want to come up with some sort of fluff behind all of them. So I went ahead and used the, I don't want to call them rules, guidelines, I guess, for adding personality that appeared in some early issues of Battle Games Magazine. And these are the ones that Henry Hyde uses for his Wars of the Faultanian Succession. So all my unit commanders have scores for initiative, intelligence, courage, charisma, strength, health, and so forth. And they're all named and everything, and I'm trying to inject that into the write-ups that I do, so you can find that on the blog. Plus, I'm getting into Dystopian Wars because the Wiz on Route 9 East in Westboro is moving 2 miles closer to 495. They're still staying on Route 9, but they were having and still are having a big sale. It's between 15 and 50% off. Excuse me, everything in the store, 15 to 50% off. They are at the new location as of September 1st. If you're in the area, head on up there. I got tons of Prussian Empire stuff for Dystopian Wars. I have some pictures of some of the stuff up online on the blog that I have painted, so you might want to check that out. Otherwise, I just want to thank all of you for listening, and I want to say that we will be back with episodes for all of you after the move. I have to release an episode that I recorded with my friend Drew, and then, of course, there is the huge and very exciting interview of Derek Lloyd and Chase Lacordaire of Battleground Games and Hobbies. That'll be coming out afterwards, too. That's at least a two-hour episode, so that's going to take some editing. But after the move, we'll be doing bi-weekly episodes, an hour in length. Of course, the Battleground Games episode, so, you know, a little different. It's an extra special one. So I hope you will continue to stay tuned to us on Twitter and on Facebook. We'll have updates on there as possible. And just thank you for listening, and we'll be back after the move. So you'll be able to officially have new episodes as of September 1st, but it's possible that I might be able to get episodes out to you sooner. Thank you very much, and as always, keep on gaming.
Hey there, this is Ben Gerber from Troll in the Corner, and I'd like to invite you to listen to my podcast, Indie Talks. Indie Talks is a discussion about independent publishing, where we take a look at indie games, the people who write them, and the people who play them. We're going to branch a little farther afield as well and talk to some independent television and movie stars and creators, as well as crafters, all of who are related to gaming in some way, shape, or form. So please join me on the Troll in the Corner network at trollitc.com and give Indie Talks a listen.
This is Andreas, Apprentice of the White Order. I would like to invite you to listen to my letters, a humble collection of my observations of the various beautiful and very, very dangerous creatures that inhabit my world. I hope you enjoy it, as part of the Monsters of the Shattered World on Troll in the Corner at trollitc.com.
Geeks Explicitly, new episodes coming at you every Thursday, talking about geek life. If you don't listen to Geeks Explicitly, then only at trollitc.com. Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by 127games.com, home of the cheapest Access and Allies miniatures. Find them at 12-7-games.com. Wargaming Recon is a proud member of the Troll in the Corner podcast network. Visit www.trollitc.com for more information. This recording is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share-Alike 3.0 license. Look for Wargaming Recon online at www.wargamingforums.com. We're also on Twitter, Facebook, and Stitcher Radio. You can learn more about this episode by reading the show notes on our blog. Many thanks to Andrew and Court for inspiring the show's name. Thank you for listening, and keep on gaming.
I wish I were Jean-Luc Picard. I don't think it would be that hard to sip Earl Grey and save the day while boldly going through the stars. Or maybe I'd be Captain Mal, a shining six gun as my pal. Sexy, broke, and full of jokes, even as things have gone to hell. Oh, I wish I were Starship Captain. I wish I were. I wish that I could be James Bond, with dry martinis, cars, and blondes, a PPK, and sharp things to say when I'm about to get it on. Or Harry Potter, king of spells and sorcery. I'd have no equals, and my sequels would become an industry. Yeah, I wish I were a British icon. I wish I were. Stones to find the grail, and I think I'd fail at turning Nazis into bones. As Han Solo, I could be the baddest in the galaxy, and I shot first for what it's worth, 'cause I'm a scoundrel, yeah, that's me. Oh, oh, I wish I were anything Harrison Ford's ever been. I wish I were.
Dude.
I wish I were.